Hello and welcome to this episode of The Upgrade. I'm your host, Peter Bittner. Today's guest is Salvador Klein, a post-exit founder, an angel investor, and an advisor to many early stage ventures. Sal has recently started an amazing newsletter called The Three Strikes Theory, and I'm excited to chat with him today about that project and his journey to, you know, this moment, which I think is really critical, particularly for those of us in media who might already have one strike against us. We're going to hear a little bit more about that today.
Thanks, Peter. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
My pleasure. Yeah. Tell me a bit about, you know, your journey as an entrepreneur. It sounds like you've been involved in a number of startups over the years.
In a nutshell, I started with nothing. Single parent family on welfare in Canada. So I've always had not much to lose and everything to gain, which is a good position for a founder to be in, I suppose. And I worked in corporates for a while there in media and in online market research and saw what happened to the media industry when the internet hit. And then in about 16 years ago, I started my own media agency, which had ups and downs. When it had downs, I remortgaged this place in Bondi Beach, Australia twice to save it. And when it had ups, it afforded me personally the ability to invest $2.5 million into startups. And it was not a deliberate strategy. It was relationships and people I came across who I liked them, their ideas, the ventures they were building that were trying to do some good in the world. And I tried to back them with my money, but also with my time. And when I handed over the operations of my agency about 6 years ago, since then, all I've been doing is putting my time and my money behind people and projects and trying to help founders do the tough job of being a startup CEO when you have conflicting demands from below and conflicting advice from above and never enough time and money to do everything. In this journey, it's become apparent to me that any company, large or small, is only ever three strikes of good luck away from great success or three strikes of bad luck away from complete disaster. And I've seen it with my own eyes. And that is why I decided to write this stuff down on a Substack called The Three Strikes Theory to share it, because I think it is the single most important business insight that I have ever had that's worth sharing.
So tell me about your background as an angel investor and advisor in a wide variety of companies, it sounds like. You know, there's sort of this whole school of kind of hands-off, you know, investing, right? That, you know, the VC industry oftentimes is very much a proponent of. You have massive venture funds that honestly couldn't care less, and many founders who perhaps don't want that advice or, you know, anyway, right? They just want the money on the best terms possible. But you mentioned relationships are key in your process, and I'd imagine a lot of, you know, your founders that you work with benefit from it greatly. You've been very involved as an advisor, but tell me about, you know, your experience as an angel and, you know, how you've really invested your time as well.
Yeah, I don't think there's a problem with any investor, whether they're an angel or a venture capitalist, investing some money, completing that transaction and getting the shares and then leaving that company to it. I don't think that's a problem. I do think there's a problem if investors who've never actually been founders and run businesses think they can run businesses better than the founders themselves. Doesn't mean they don't have advice to share. So there's a balance point, right? Like everything in life and in work, I suppose. Startups are really hard and risky. So for sure, startups need a lot of help. The real question for founders is the advice you're getting implementable based on the team, time, and money you have? And if the advice is not implementable, it's not very good advice. It's literally useless to you, right? Counterproductive. And the startup CEO has a really tough job because they have conflicting demands from below. They might have different people taking care of different areas of their business. And the number one priority for each of those people is never the number one priority for the company. And you have different advisors and board directors and investors who all are giving you conflicting advice from the top. And your job, in effect, is to keep everybody just a little bit unhappy. And you're the only one who's got the full 360-degree view of the business and has to make the tough decision on prioritizing limited time and money resources and the singular person who's responsible for the outcome of that, which again leads me to try to share this three strikes theory with those people, which is really about, you know, identifying accurately when a strike has occurred, reassessing the risk levels as if you were looking at this situation in hindsight, and putting yourself and your company in luck's way deliberately. What are the three things that could happen that would make your company take off? And how do we put the company into those positions?
I love that framework because it is so practical. And I'm really wondering if you can walk us through some of the examples of what those three strikes could look like first. You know, what are some of the ones that fall into that strikes category that you've seen?
Yeah, so I work with and support the founders and leadership teams of companies across a real diverse range of sectors. Some of them are in food or physical products. A lot of them are tech companies, ed tech, fintech, AI, ad tech, etc. So across clean technologies, you know, solar software, they all have common problems despite the fact they're in diverse industries. And usually when my first question to a founder is, what kept you up last night? What's your biggest unsolvable problem? And to be honest, it's in three categories. It's either a personal problem or a health problem or a professional problem. And I'm not a life coach, but I can tell you what, you can't help a founder or CEO if they are depressed because of their home life or because of they're sick because they're not taking care of themselves, right? So I start with the negatives because I suppose my job is, number one, how do you not die? How do you make sure your startup doesn't fail, right? And then how do you try to make your startup scale? So the first case study on my Substack, Three Strikes Theory, is about a startup that had three strikes of bad luck, which led to disaster. And in that case study, and the Three Strikes Theory, you know, the theory is that any company, large or small, is only three strikes of good luck away from success and three strikes of bad luck away from disaster. The first case study is a startup in a regulated industry, which means they have a higher barrier to entry because they have to comply, right? They have to be licensed and comply. But they were growing. They managed to subsidize their higher costs by some licensing. They're licensed to subcontractors. So from day one, they had some operating cash flow, which kind of negated their need for external investor capital. So they got a long way without raising much money. And everything was looking good for them. Their revenue was trending up year on year. They were very investable. They felt like they were on the up. They were. They were definitely past proof of concept. They were definitely a minimum viable product. It was working with real customers. So their strategy was to get to scale through launching a high revenue business-to-business model. Now, the first strike of bad luck was a black swan event, the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Very hard to predict. Their development team is based in Ukraine. And so, of course, that was very disruptive to the timelines. It pushed out the timeline of launching their B2B offering by 6 to 9 months, which didn't just push out the launch, but it pushed out the time involved in learning what the true B2B sales cycle was like, the length of it, how hard it was to convert a customer, how long it took to develop a lead, etc. So it essentially put them 18 months behind schedule on first revenues for that B2B product line. And a singular strike in and of itself is never usually fatal, even though there can be times when that happens. But the consequences become apparent when you start to look at the second and third strike. So about a year later, the second and third strikes happened, but they both happened in the same month. The second strike was increased compliance costs. Because their revenue hit a certain number, their compliance costs, monthly compliance costs, quadrupled to a significant number. And in the same month, they lost their single largest subcontractor of their license. So in the same 30-day period, their costs went up, their revenues came down. And they were in that period where they were 18 months behind schedule for new revenues from their B2B offering. That combination of factors spooked them.
Wow.
So that's an example of the first startup and the convergent timing of the second and third strikes of bad luck. And that was the first case study on the Substack. And it goes into some analysis around what they could have done, how they could have reassessed the risks and taken action through that period.
Yeah, I'm so curious. Did this startup survive?
It did survive, but in a greatly diminished state after a restructure. And for the founder's journey, that kind of stuff adds about 2 to 3 years of time to the whole journey, which is never really the plan. And I think that's probably what hurts founders the most. You know, all businesses go through ups and downs, but it's the fact that your journey is just add 3 years to get to the same place you were 3 months ago. That's what hurts, I think, founders. And that's what they struggle with. But yeah, and then the second case study, even more fascinating from my perspective, is actually on a multi-billion dollar listed company that has three strikes of bad luck and goes from hero to villain. And the first two strikes were convergent timing. And interestingly, fascinatingly, that convergent timing of the first two strikes actually triggered the third strike. And this multi-billion dollar listed company went from $5.50 share price, 4 months later, 50 cents. And it proves that any company, large or small, is not immune to three strikes of bad luck.
Wow. You know, there's a bunch of great stories of those who've succeeded, but I feel like there's fewer of, you know, the core make or break moments and decisions that had to be made, particularly when things went awry, and how to mitigate those or avoid them. And those are even more valuable, right?
It's great to learn from success stories of others to be inspired, but you very rarely hear the failures. A lot of it's because it's sensitive. A lot of founders have shared stories with me in response to the three strikes theory being published. And I always say, wow, this is an amazing case study. Can I write this down? And they say, no, it's too sensitive. So the challenge for me is to find stories that I can share meaningfully.
Hey there, are you enjoying this episode? If so, you might be interested in my live online training courses and consulting services. Visit theupgrade.ai to learn more. I'd love to help you and your organization get up to speed on AI.
I know you mentioned that there was something related to generative AI and search that you've found to be, you know, potential first strike for a number of different companies and organizations.
Absolutely. So I don't know. Do you remember when AltaVista was the biggest search engine on the internet?
No.
I do. And but of course, Google became the dominant search engine globally, as we all know. And search forever, from beginning to today, is someone goes to Google, they write a search query, and Google's algorithm lists websites that have those answers in order, the most relevant at the top, and then they stick some ads at the top too. That's what search is. So what has emerged is, you know, are we searching the internet or are we searching Google's internet? And the joke, of course, is the best place to hide a dead body is on page 2 of Google search, because no one ever goes there. So a lot of businesses have built their business models and adapted their business models around being found on Google and not paying for that traffic, but being found on Google through organic listings. They have SEO strategies. They pump out articles. They say, this is my top ranking article. This gets me as many clicks a month, for example. They don't pay for those clicks. And of course, brands do pay for lots of traffic from Google. And so with that context being set, one potential strike for almost every company that has a website and relies in any way on any kind of free traffic from Google, whether it's organic or direct, search generative experience from Google is probably the biggest news story of internet history that has gone almost unreported. And here's why. Because they've launched a patent, which is public. They've even got a video about it on YouTube. And this technology, just to compare it with search yesterday, is someone goes to Google, searches a query, and then Google's algorithm gives them a list of websites around the world where to find the answer to that query with some ads at the top. That's yesterday. Tomorrow, through search generative experience, same person goes to the same Google with the same query, but Google has copied the entire internet, runs it through their AI, and republishes the right article right then and there. with some paid ads around the top, instead of giving you a list of organically ranked websites to go and find your answers. So Google becomes a publisher of the answers for you. And interestingly, it's not the same answer for everybody. It's based on what Google knows about you. So if I go and search for something and you go and search for something, Peter, you and I are going to get differently published answers from Google. And so just imagine for a second, you're a comparison website, an online comparison website that relies 100% on direct and organic traffic. And you don't actually buy any traffic from Google at all. And imagine if that disappears overnight. You're close to disaster. Search generative experience is definitely a potential strike of bad luck for every business on the planet, and everyone needs to know about it for that reason.
And why hasn't it made more headlines?
Perhaps because the first industry that's going to be affected the most by it is the news industry, and the news industry is in a frenemy situation with Google and Meta, and they're scared of losing all of their traffic, which they need, but their job is to report the news, which they should do. It should be on the front page of every newspaper and every website all over the world. Google's trying to steal your internet. And the security concerns around having one algorithm determine the answer for me without my consent, that's just how the tool has evolved. It should be front page news. The challenge, Peter, is that in the Google business model of search, search generative experience actually does remove friction from the process. Because today I've got to go and search for something, and then there's a list, and I've got to go do all the searching and clicking around the list and comparing and then decide what the right answer is for me. Google just tells me what the right answer is for me. That's removed a lot of friction, but that might be a wolf in sheep's clothing.
It also seems like a decision that clearly was made because they're in the defensive, right? With some of these other generative AI, for example, ChatGPT, right? Famously, serving up these answers in a personalized way to user queries on their interfaces. So they've been pressured into cannibalizing their own business. And, you know, Google results have gotten bad in traditional search for a number of reasons, too. Now I see almost half or more of the first page results on a traditional search being sponsored spots. If you know, 5, 6, sometimes 7, it's comical.
Well, I'm not a strategist for Google, but their business model is we scrape the internet. Our algorithm essentially ranks all this websites and content, and then we match the most relevant to the queries. That's their business model. That's what they've promised us and they delivered us for the last 20 years. And so they can continue to do that. They've made plenty of money off the back of that business model, which is free for websites to get SEO traffic. And it's free for us to go and search and find a list of websites. So they can uphold that business model at the same time as delivering less friction in the search experience by giving us as users options for or new experience of how to access content. But they have to be mindful that they're killing a lot of businesses who rely on them. And we've seen this playbook before from big tech. We saw it with Facebook when Facebook launched likes and company pages and then, you know, the ability to buy and promote likes. The brands were spending money to buy followers to the Facebook pages because it was their community. But then what happened was the Facebook algorithm literally changed to say, and I quote, "You should assume an organic reach of 0 when you post on your own company Facebook page because they want you to pay to promote your post to your own audience that you paid to build." So we've seen this playbook, this exact playbook before from big tech with Meta. And now we're seeing it with Google.
So what are some ways in which companies, organizations with any online presence, right, or website do to put themselves in a better position defensively, you know, to either avoid or mitigate these types of risks that are, you know, coming at us very fast here with you know, search generative experience really being clearly the future here, either later this year or beyond?
Yeah. Well, you need to try and build a relationship with your customers and your traffic, whether that's direct and you know who they are and you can email them, or if it's indirect and you can retarget them, right? you've been to my website before and you can retarget them and bring them back and with your own money, you know, those kind of methodologies, whether it's organic or ad-based or first-party data type stuff, but also you need to start, you know, looking at where the internet is going and other search engines, other ways of discoverability, because everyone has to reinvent themselves to a certain degree to accommodate this great industry change. That's a fact. You can't ignore that. The specifics of how to do it, that's the kind of stuff I work on with the founders that I engage with.
As we come towards the end of the conversation here, what are some takeaways that you'd like to leave the audience regarding this strike that is, if not, you know, fully ticked off yet, on the way?
Understand what it is, right? Everyone needs to understand what search generative experience is and what it means. Go to YouTube and search for it and watch the video that Google put out about it, promoting it. But then go to Google and search for something and take a step back and see what your experience actually is. Search for your own brand on Google, right? Your own company, and see what experience you have and what other ads are in the way and where you rank in organic search. And then imagine if the organic search is just gone and what that would mean. Look at your Google Analytics or your website analytics and see how much traffic you get from organic search. And imagine if that's gone and assess how much of an impact that would have on your business. That is what we're talking about here. That's the potential impact of this strike of search generative experience. And then on the three strikes theory, of course, you don't have to come and subscribe, even though you're all very welcome to. But even if you don't, the most important thing is to think about, what are the three strikes of bad luck that could put my business in ruin? And how do I actually identify a single strike, let's just say the first strike is search generative experience, in context of two other convergent strikes that are triggered by this first strike that you can't control or predict, that put your business in ruin? Put yourself 6 months in the future and look at the situation in hindsight and just imagine what you would say. God, I wish I did that then. I wish I took that risk more seriously then. That's the level of thinking you need to have to mitigate the risks based on the three strikes theory. Separately, think about how you put yourself and your business in good luck's way three times. And I wish you the best success.
Fantastic. It's been great to chat with you today, Sal. Where can people subscribe to your newsletter?
Okay, so they can go to Substack and just search for the three strikes theory. They can go to my LinkedIn, Salvador Klein, and click on the visit my blog button. It's free. The whole idea is about getting this theory into the minds of founders, CEOs, and business leaders. And the theory is relevant for companies large and small in any sector, anywhere in the world. The Three Strikes Theory Substack that I'm writing has implementable insights, not just wistful thoughts, not just new notions that you might not have otherwise come across, but actually, like, you know, real life examples and implementable things that all of us can do to mitigate risks and put ourselves in luck's way.
I think it's brilliant, and I'm really looking forward to continue to follow along your newsletter and wishing you the best with that Substack. I really appreciate you sharing your insights and framework.
Thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you don't miss the next one. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Want to help others discover the Upgrade Pod? Please consider leaving a 5-star rating and sharing this episode with your friends and colleagues. You can see a full list of episodes on theupgrade.ai, where you can also learn about our AI training courses and consulting services. By the way, I'm always looking for new people to come on the show. Want to become my next guest? Have an idea for someone you'd like me to interview? Visit theupgrade.ai, where you can nominate yourself or others to come on the show. Special thanks this week to Levi Bridges for production help. Until next time, stay calm and keep upgrading.